This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Just like that, the final hour of the Monday edition is here. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. No Chad Withrow this week. He is on furlough. David Reed's the chairman of the board. I'm looking at Paul Kuharski in Brentwood. Jonathan Hutton with you in Murfreesboro. We've been reacting to The Last Dance. You can join us as well. 615-737-1045, our number. Austin Price of VolQuest.com gives us the latest on Tennessee football coming up at 1:15. We'll dive into more details on the latest commitment that you heard David Reed mention at tight end for the Tennessee Volunteers. Again, that's at 1:15. Still time for your calls, though, 737-1045. Paul, while the Titans could partially reopen their facility tomorrow, they're holding off for at least another week, and the rule of I believe the Chiefs are one of the teams that are opening this week. The rules are they can open up to 50% of their employee base. No coaches or players are included in that unless they're rehabbing injuries. But it's up to 75 people, so it's either 50% or 75 people, whichever comes first. But it's a good sign that some of these teams are able to do it, and it sounds like the Titans are close to being able to do it.
Yeah, I think probably a week from tomorrow, day after Memorial Day, is when we'll see it. And Mike Keith was talking about them earlier, figuring out how to space things out appropriately. This also, for the record, includes all facilities. So if they're to bring some people back to Nissan Stadium, this counts against the 50% and the 75%.
Okay.
So if they have anybody in the ticket offices over there or in stadium ops, that would also count. And maybe they would need somebody there. I guess it's, they're figuring out what's most important. I think, like a lot of businesses, a lot of people have figured out that they can be productive from home and certain jobs can be done from home. This is me spitballing here, but, media relations works largely with the coach and the players. And if the coach and the players aren't there, media relations, I would guess, could probably do their jobs from home for the time being, which would create opportunity for, other departments to have more people back. I don't know. But I think they'll get back in there as need be. John Robinson, certainly I would think would be one of the people that would be back in there. Burke Nihil to run the whole operation could get in there. I know Steve Underwood was in there over the Friday, Saturday cleaning out his stuff and doing his official goodbye, probably with nobody else in the building.
What did you think of Burke Nihil's visit on 3HL last week? I did not get a chance to hear it, but we did speak with Steve Underwood the week prior, yep, who had a lot of good things to say about Burke, who has been with the organization since 2016 and has been traveling with the team as well.
I thought it was a good, introductory. Here he is. Here's kind of what he sounds like and what he's about. Kind of guy. I think by the nature of the interview, they didn't talk much about what's on his agenda going forward. Chad and I had a speculative conversation about that, and I think
stadium
goes without saying, a guy like that who's been a governmental liaison for the team and who's overseen the plan for the building that they're putting up on the campus over there is going to be the lead dog on stadium retrofitting, redesigning, whatever we want to call it. We know you and I had a conversation with Amy in Canton where she said she's not looking for a new stadium, where she talked about liking Miami,
Hard Rock Stadium,
what they did at Hard Rock Stadium, and envisioning
it's our favorite. It's my personal favorite stadium that we visit that I've been to. And I haven't been to every single NFL stadium yet, but that counts. MetLife and Jerry World and all of it, just because 70% of the stadium is covered with an overhang. That's first and foremost. So it's a guaranteed dry seat for the most part. Yeah. But it's also a great seat regardless of where you are in the stadium. And the amenities below in the lower areas for season ticket holders are fantastic. I mean, they have taken into account in their $500 plus million upgrade what exactly was keeping people at home and giving them a reason to bring their living room to the stadium itself.
I wouldn't rank it that high, but the bang for the buck out of $500 million when these new places are costing upwards of $2 billion is ridiculously good. And I think that's great for Nashville.
I just think it's very aesthetically pleasing, too. A lot of these stadiums now are cavernous. Houston is a cavern. MetLife is massive. Same goes for Dallas. I mean, they're standing room only tickets, and people go to those games because it's super popular. In Miami, it's tough, right? It's tough to get people to go to pro sports games, regardless of how good you are. But they do it well based on that stadium because being there for the Super Bowl. I'm up in the nosebleeds in the media section. Had a great seat. I sent you the photo, tweeted it out. I mean, it's a great view of everything. And I sit there going, yeah, if I were a fan of a team here, I would come see a game here more than not because of everything that I need. You know, I need to physically have as a sports fan.
And I think you and I agree. Nihil will be, that'll be one of his chief responsibilities is negotiating with the city, helping Amy envision what the team would like, and then negotiating with the city to make it come to fruition and then how to do it, reasonable timeline over a couple of off seasons, probably while football's still played there, I would imagine. That would be, I would think, chief amongst his responsibilities of the sort that we'll see outside of a lot of behind the scenes stuff. So smooth transition of power, which is not something that's happened for this organization a lot.
No. Reed, sorry to interrupt your lunch. I didn't see you there. I know you're doing double duty, so this is lunchtime for you with 3HO coming out. Did you watch NASCAR yesterday in the return? Ratings up 38% nationally over their previous live race that aired. And how did you think it came across with everything that they had been preparing for?
Sports without fans to me is very difficult to watch, and I don't care what it is. I did not watch any of the soccer on Saturday, Paul. I'm sorry to disappoint you there. And even in a sport like NASCAR, where the fans aren't audibly there, you know, we're not hearing them scream and yell and cheer for the most part. Just their mere presence to me adds a dynamic to sports that I think we need. So to see them not there, I mean, it's really not unlike a race that gets delayed on a Sunday or a Saturday and has to be run on a Monday or Tuesday, and most fans can't be there. So there was that aspect to it. It lost a lot to me not having the fans there in the stands. The racing was what the racing was always going to be at Darlington. As historic of a racetrack as Darlington is, as much as I love the history and what it's meant to the sport over the years, and especially from its beginning, never been a big fan of the racing at Darlington. So it was, to me, it was just another Darlington race. I'm interested to see what those numbers, how they play out in comparison to what that race got this time last year. It's going to be a little bit different because we're talking about a different time frame. And look, I think NASCAR is trying to do everything they can to get a season in and make it as practical as possible. They're back at Darlington on Wednesday for the Toyota 500. So they're having two races there in the span of 4 days. Trying to maximize and not bring many people in or have people moving across the country unnecessarily. So, you know, it was what it was. I was more excited thinking about it than I was actually watching it on Sunday. But a lot of folks out there watching the response on social media and Twitter in particular, people were excited that NASCAR and live sports were back.
I watched some Bundesliga on Saturday morning, late morning, the second time window of games. I wasn't bothered at all by no fans. And it wasn't a great game either. And I wasn't totally into it, but it did not bother me.
We'll get back into this at 1:30 because I tend to agree with Paul based on what I've seen so far. It's the individual sports without fans right now that I'll point to because I watched a UFC card, no fans there. Reed watched NASCAR. Paul's watching soccer and how the broadcast is going. I've got notes on all that because I'm fascinated by what the casual sports fan thought. 6.5 million people tuned in nationally to watch NASCAR. That's why they need to keep this going. because for a growing, they want to grow their fan base. They're up 38% on the ratings. That's great. And they, I'm hoping they find ways to stay innovative with it and draw more people in. First though, Austin Price, VolQuest.com is going to join us. The Vols pick up another recruit today, another commitment, tight end. We'll get the latest on that and what's on the horizon for players and coaches returning to campus. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Up by Edley's Barbecue, Austin Price joins us. VolQuest.com, the website. He is back at his home in Knoxville, joining us via Skype after a visit to Murfreesboro. Austin, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Great. Claire and I went to Koji earlier over the weekend in honor of Austin visiting our great city, because we knew that that's where he would have visited. It had been his choice for dinner.
I hit up all my my normal spots in Murfreesboro. Toots, Koji, Demas's, you name it, I hit it up.
Another commitment for the Tennessee Volunteers today, Georgia tight end Miles Campbell announced his decision earlier this morning. The Vols had positioned themselves well in that race. You had mentioned that with us. So I'm guessing it's not a big surprise that Campbell is coming to the Vols.
No, not at all. And Miles did it today on his birthday. He just turned 17 today. You know, kid's 6'4", a little over 230 pounds, has a verified time at 4.6 in the 40. A kid that started his career at wide receiver, continued to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and didn't lose any speed. So that's a good sign for the athlete that he is. And, you know, got a real impressive film. They find ways to get him the ball there at South Paulding. And this is a nice get for Jeremy Pruitt and company. They'll look to add, you know, at least another tight end in this class, you know, whether that's Hudson Wolf out of, you know, Hardin County or whoever it is. They'll look to add at least one more tight end in this class, and they just continue to look to add playmakers.
Is Hudson Wolf a take regardless of numbers at the position?
In my opinion, yes. I mean, I guess anything's possible, but I just don't see them turning away Hudson Wolf. It's not a great year in state. If, you know, one of the, you know, top two or three guys wants to come to you, I think, you know, it just makes total sense. Plus I think Hudson's a really good football player. So, I think that, you know, he's got a spot if he wants it. Now, if he drags it out to December, you know, anything can change between now and then. I mean, again, as I said, attrition's going to happen, whether it be self-inflicted or kids deciding to stay home or stay closer to home or go to another school for whatever reason. That's going to happen. The key in this whole class is just holding the core group of the nucleus together. If that happens, then Tennessee's class will be really good.
Speaking of Wolf, Hudson Wolf, for those who don't know, he's from Savannah there in Hardin County. Are those around him trying to get him to stay in state from what you've heard? And it sounds as though over the last couple of weeks, you've kind of turned into saying that you think that the Vols are high on his list now, whereas when we were first bringing his name up, they were not moving the needle so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've always kind of been firmly in the top five, but I think that they've really kind of ascended. I'm not going to say number one because I don't think that's fair, but I think that they're right up there at the top, you know, with them. I think it's them and Ohio State, to be honest with you. Alabama's still in the mix. Ole Miss is still in the mix. But I think it's more likely Tennessee and Ole Miss at the kind of the top, Ohio State at the top for Hudson Wolf. And, you know, I mean, I think he does something, you know, I don't think he does anything this week or probably even next week, but I think at some point early in June, you know, to mid-June is a time you can look that, you know, he possibly could end up pulling the trigger during that time.
Austin Price with us. Austin, where are the Vols on landing more linemen? I know that is a point of emphasis.
Well, they want the two in state, and that's Pearl Cones, you know, the artist formerly known as William Griffin. I'll keep calling him that because he's changed his name around the middle of the deal. His name is William Parker now. And then Dietrich Pennington out of ECS, out of the state, they're going to continue to swing on two, I think, really main guys, and that'd be Amarius Mims and Diego Pounds. Mims out of the state of Georgia, Pounds out of North Carolina. And they still would love to be a factor for a guy like Dylan Fairchild, who is a real nasty guard out of the state of Georgia. But it just seems like Georgia's the team trending there for Dylan Fairchild.
Did you see the report out of South Carolina about how they're bringing classes back in the fall, but they're going to do away with fall break, and then right after Thanksgiving, when students go home for Thanksgiving, they don't return to campus. Everything from that point on, 1 or 2 weeks, I guess, is what I remember that semester being, would be online. Restrictions on team activities and everything I know will be discussed later this week, but what are you hearing just around campus on how Tennessee may feel about that line of thinking?
I think that, one, it's a smart decision on South Carolina's part. One, just go ahead and eliminate the fall break, and then two, you know, go ahead and get an early start on being home around the Christmas holidays. Now, granted, you're still going to have online work, but it's not the same as bringing everybody back in here for a quick 2 week run. I think it honestly helps the athletes a lot too, because that's right around, you know, the end of their, you know, football season slash, you know, preparing for a bowl game. And you know, I think anytime you can be proactive. So it's basically allowing the student athletes and or just students in general get back on campus, you know, have a normal semester, but we're going to tweak it a little bit. That way it gives everybody the best chance during what would be that cold and flu season to potentially, you know, be away from each other and not kind of just like have something spread even more so. So Tennessee, I know, is very proactive in trying to come up with a game plan for when students return to campus, whether that's June 1, June 15, July 1, whatever that is. And I think right now it's likely to end up as June 1. But I know that, you know, there were some reservations just on how quick to bring them back. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, I think you started to see around, you know, all over the U.S. I mean, you've seen Governor Cuomo in the state of New York today, you know, telling, you know, the pro franchises, you know, to prepare for a return to action without fans. That's a good sign. Again, I think for all of us, I think everybody would love to see 102,000 people in Neyland Stadium in the fall. Ultimately, I think Tennessee fans just want to see Tennessee football in the fall. And same thing at the high school level. Same thing right on down to, you know, my kids' soccer games coming up on Saturdays in the fall. You want them to have activities. You want them to be able to play. And so I think everybody's just trying to find the smartest, most effective way to do that without limiting the risk.
And as Austin just alluded to, restrictions on team activities and practices and other organized gatherings in the SEC are currently in effect for 2 more weeks. And there's a vote that will reportedly take place this Friday to allow players to return to campus on Monday, June 1st. Where does Tennessee and Philip Fulmer come down on this? Because I read the report last week from Kentucky Sports Radio that Fulmer was the one dissenting opinion on when to return. And I think he was saying, according to the report, June 15th instead of June 1st. What have you been able to hear and learn about the way Fulmer specifically feels about this?
Well, I think, you know, for Coach Fulmer, he wants to do everything in the best interest of the student athlete. So, you know, he's very cognizant of, you know, the social distancing, you know, making sure you sanitize everything, just kind of coming up with the best game plan to be able to have athletes in the weight room, athletes out on the practice field for 7-on-7s for football and other team activities across all of the sports, not just football, but basketball, softball, baseball, anything in the fall, soccer. You know, so I think that, you know, Coach Fulmer doesn't want to come back June 1st. I think it's just like, hey, let's talk about this more. Does it behoove us to wait an additional 2 weeks as you continue to see the numbers go down in certain areas? Now, granted, they're always going to, you know, depending on where you're at, they're going to fluctuate. But, you know, a lot of the numbers have been super positive. So, you know, I think that's the biggest, you know, thing for Coach Fulmer. It's not that he doesn't want the you know, his teams to, you know, put themselves at risk or have a competitive disadvantage. I think he just wants to, you know, talk about it more, just make sure that, you know, they're all making the right decision for the right reasons, not just because everybody wants to, you know, just return to normalcy to return to normalcy.
A random one for you on the way out. You like me and Paul and David, big golf fans here. We're looking forward to the matchup coming up this weekend over the Memorial Day weekend with Tiger and Phil and Brady and Manning. Among the two players, I don't know much about their golf games, Manning or Brady. What can you tell us about Manning's play on the golf course?
Brady's pretty solid. Now, he should be. He's played a lot, you know, since he's
pro-am. Yeah.
You know, and it helps. I mean, you look at where all he's a member at the clubs in Indianapolis, like Crooked Stick. He's able to get up there to, you know, the Die Club at French Lick. He's a member out there, you know, at Cherry Hills out in Denver, Colorado, which is where Arnold Palmer won the 1960 U.S. Open. He's a member at Augusta, as we all know.
Yeah.
He's a member at the Old Farm up in Bristol. He's a member at the Honors down in Chattanooga. He's got his own fair share of great places to play. So he probably should be a little better than Tom Brady at this point. Tom will get better once he retires from football and is able to spend more time with it. But on the whole, I think both of them hit it pretty solid. And then you gotta like Tiger versus Phil in this deal. Just you know, again, Phil will turn 50 coming up next month. And, you know, Father Time is undefeated.
I'm hoping and praying that they mic them up even more than what we saw from the match play between Tiger and Phil on pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm hoping that we get even more insight.
Every word. I want every word.
Yeah. But the banter between Brady and Manning, that's all I care about. Like, on the golf course. I just want more of that than I do the actual picking up the game of golf between the two, between Brady and, you know, Tiger, for instance.
I think Peyton and you know, Tom Brady will have a good amount of trash talk. I think they're going to be really good at it, as you've seen. I think Phil is really good at trash talk. Tiger is more reserved, but Tiger always has the, you know, 15 majors that he can always slide in there. Or you know what I'm saying? Like, he loves to, like, poke with just, like, you know, actual stats versus, like, you know, just kind of having a good game of trash talk. I'll say this. We just got done watching The Last Dance. The Golf Channel has a document, you know, a docu-series coming up on the Tiger Slam from 2000 and early 2001 when Tiger held all four professional majors. I'm excited for that. That actually comes up the 24th. So that's a Sunday, right?
Yep.
So, you know, that's one I'm excited to kind of watch as well. So, you know, we're kind of getting a nice little run here of kind of some look backs and some, you know, kind of takeaways from some special time in sports, you know, right there in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Austin Price, VolQuest.com, joins us twice a week, and he'll join us later this week when I'm sure Tennessee will have another two or five recruits committed to the program.
Maybe.
And we'll discuss that. Plus, I want to get into JT Daniels and the decision that he is making or trying to make with the parameters of whether or not he'll actually have to sit out a year if he transfers. We'll get into that on Friday as well. Austin, thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Coming up, sports with no fans and our takeaways and how we kind of like it, except for David Reed. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Among the sports that we've seen, no fans in attendance as sports get back to playing, back in season, or back fighting for the UFC's case. Paul and I kind of agree on this, that we haven't hated it. We haven't hated the lack of fan attendance. And I've got some specific examples to point to. But Reed, and this surprises me just based on the coverage of the sport itself, I would think NASCAR lends itself to a better viewing experience regardless of whether or not fans are there. But Reed, you feel differently. You like knowing that the fans are there in the stands visually.
Yeah, I think so. And it's funny that Andrew Bogus in the CBS Sports Update that just aired basically laid out the entire argument against me not liking NASCAR playing out in front of the fans. It's the one sport where it has its built-in soundtrack. You don't need to hear the fans roar to know that they're there. It sounds like it normally would sound on any given Sunday throughout the course of the season. Whereas soccer, on the other hand, it's blatantly obvious that there's no one there watching that game inside the stadium. I don't know what it is about it. There's something about it I just do not like.
Yeah.
But the bad part about it is, if I want sports around, this is going to have to be something that I get used to. Is it going to keep me from watching the sports that I really want to? Will it keep me from watching Tennessee football in the fall? No, but there will be a part of me that feels incomplete. And I just can't put my finger on why.
UFC events, they had three over 8 days over the last week in Jacksonville, same venue. We got into this a little bit earlier. One positive test out of over 1,200 tests administered. But Paul, stick with me here, because here's what I really liked about it. It's always mic'd up very well inside the octagon, But with no fans, you can actually hear these punches land like nothing before. I mean, it is, it's brutal to begin with. And then when you actually hear the volume cranked up a notch because there's no one cheering in the background, it's crazy. Also, normally when these fights go to the ground for a 30, 45, a minute, and it doesn't look like much action is going on, even though there's some technique aspects to it, the fans in the attendance boo. They boo the two fighters, and that gets to the announcers who then call on the official to do something about it, right? Stand them up, you know? Didn't happen here because no one's reacting to what the fans are doing. It also affects the fighters. And the one example I give, and I know not everyone, vast majority, probably not a big UFC fan, but I think you can appreciate this because it falls in line with all sports. Two very different fighter mentalities that played out in a main event on the pay-per-view last Saturday night. Justin Gaethje and Tony Ferguson fighting for an interim title. Tony Ferguson feeds off the crowd. He is a showman. And Justin Gaethje reacts to the crowd where he's known as a knockout artist. And had he landed a big punch in the first round, which he did, and heard the crowd react to it, he probably wears himself out giving all this energy instead of staying patient within the game plan of what his camp had set up. Gaethje ended up winning the fight in the fifth. But had the crowd been there, he's been known to just trigger happy, so to speak, and waste all of his energy early in a fight. And that didn't happen because the crowd wasn't there. On the flip side, Ferguson never got into it mentally with the trash talk because the crowd wasn't there laughing or getting, you know, hyped up and screaming at every mimic he would make of the fighter running away from him. So I think it played into it. It was a fascinating watch for me for the first time. I'm not saying I want it all the time because right. title fights deserve massive audiences. And I love the fight night crowd, and I want to go every time that there's a pay-per-view on.
Big bearing on the psychological element.
Yeah, the viewing aspect of it, too, was cranked up a notch. And final thing, the announcer sitting octagon side calling this, the fighters could hear them. And they're reacting to what Daniel Cormier is saying, a veteran UFC fighter, is saying about them on the national broadcast in real time. It's crazy.
So I wasn't watching the soccer as attentively as you were. I thought the announcers could have brought more. Ian Dark, the announcer who does a lot of broadcast in America, he wasn't involved in this, but he tweeted that everybody should maybe cut the announcers a break. First go round, it's new to them too, and you know, expanded rosters and different setting and everything. They'll get better at it. It's first go round for them. I thought they could have brought more, but in terms of the game, you know, and maybe I'm different. I like atmosphere. I like all of that.
Yeah.
But ultimately I'm there for the game. I watched a 2-0 game or a game that was 2-0 for a long stretch. And I didn't find it that different than regular. I mean, I pointed out to Simon, hey, look, you know, when you could see the crowd there, there's nobody there. And he was like, that'd be cool if you were the only person in there, you know, walking around. And we kind of talked about what it'd be like to be in an empty stadium. I didn't see a goal, I don't think, until I didn't see a goal. I saw replays of the goals. So I didn't see the celebrations, but I'm not a big celebration guy either. And so I just didn't feel like there was a huge thing missing. I thought it was very cool. One of the teams that has a traditional celebration running to at the end of the game, going to the end, that's like the you know, the equivalent of their dog pound, went over there and did its typical salute to the empty end, you know, and kind of showed off that so that it would be shown on TV and make those supporters feel the way they would feel had they been there. But the game I watched, I was not put off by the lack of fans in the building. I didn't feel some giant hole in my heart or some giant absence. Would I prefer it be normal? Yes. Do I have any beef about watching the game as it was played? No. And I would be perfectly content if, given the limitations we have, and that's what there is to watch. If I watch things like that, I'll take them.
How about Fox and Joe Buck saying that if the NFL starts up without fans, they're going to pipe in fan reaction?
Now, did you see, he backed off of that. He said, what I said is they're working on a variety of things. And ultimately, like, some of it may be like pumping in fans, you know, collective fans from home or from bars, if they're allowed to be in bars or whatever, not just simply funneling. Not just simply funneling in tape recorded crowd noise.
Gotcha.
But he got into a big brouhaha back and forth with Sports Illustrated on the headline on their report that he didn't feel accurately reflected what he said. I think it's unnecessary. I think it will be cool to hear it, cool in a way that it wasn't cool for the Oilers in 96 in the Astrodome when you heard stuff because there was nobody there because they couldn't draw fans. This would be cool in a way that, you know, is a level playing field for everybody if it comes to that. But I just don't think it's as gigantic a factor. And, you know, a matinee baseball game for the Orioles isn't too far off of hell, I was at one on a Sunday afternoon where my kid ran the bases with his buddies, where I can't remember. We looked at the box score and what they listed. They listed 17 or 12 or something ridiculous.
Yeah, but the average national broadcast is going to have it. That's where you're going to notice it, right? Like Monday Night Football at Mile High in Denver for the Titans in week one could be at an empty stadium.
Yeah.
That will be jarring. The same way it will be at Neyland Stadium or in Tuscaloosa, right? That's on a Saturday afternoon. That's where it's really going to be jarring. Not at we're used to it in Baltimore, right? Seeing the fans like that, or many of the lower tier college football teams.
Well, I think that's where it's going to test the opinions of people like Paul, because we rarely notice a crowd at a baseball game unless it's the playoffs. That's when you notice. Yes. That's when the crowd is alive at a baseball game. It's football that's going to seem like a completely different product from television, watching it with no fans.
Third down.
In college football
on
in particular.
On a third down. Yeah. On a big third down, absolutely. I think that's the case. And then some of the psychological things Hutton's talking about, I think we really will get a chance to see if teams are juiced the way we think they are by stuff like that. And also, I think we'll see what home field advantage is worth Vegas-wise in a new way. Are you getting 2 or 3 points for playing at home, or is it nothing now?
That's a great point.
Does the flight count for anything? Because that's all it is now. Does stepping on a different field matter if the fans aren't involved? Especially if it's a bus trip. If you're talking about Philadelphia, New York, with no fans involved, when you're talking about a 90-minute bus ride, day of the game, does it matter to a point spread? Should it matter to a point spread? I'm very curious about that. And that's this from a guy that doesn't bet.
And we can certainly reach out to people that do, that if they can figure that out for us pretty easily. We'll give our take more on this coming up. You can join us, 615-737-1045, 3HL just around the corner. And we have our sports retrospective segment coming up tomorrow that you're not going to want to miss. Details on that next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Great news with Edley's. They are reopening in East Nashville. They're excited to announce that they're planning to open their East Nashville location on Monday, June 1st. It's been tough to get through the tornado damage and the pandemic, but they're getting back into the swing of things at their East location soon. Edley's is actively hiring for this location, as well as their other locations, but they're starting first with their East location. If you're interested in a job with Edley's Barbecue and with Will and Catherine, who are great, Visit edleysbbq.com/jobs, edleysbbq.com/jobs, or visit their Sylvan Park location in person this week, Monday through Friday. And if you're not interested, but you know someone who might be, spread the word for us. Let them know. edleysbbq.com/jobs. 3HL is coming up.
Produced by David Reed. Dickie Reed.
Paul, you were going to get into his thought process for 3HL.
Yeah. I mean, how are you going to manage this show? How can we expect it to be different today? How are you shaping it?
I plan on working just as hard as JT would, so I plan on sitting back doing nothing but eating for the next 4 hours.
Oh, he definitely
not eating. No, he's not eating. He's eating, but he's not eating anything that has any carbs in it.
Yeah,
I got ridiculed for eating pickles with too many carbs in it last week by JT.
Pickles have carbs?
The ones I were eating did. The sweet bread, the bread and butter. No, the bread and butter pickles. Yeah.
I've never heard that. I didn't know a cucumber had carbs.
Yeah, the bread and butter ones are like the candy of the cucumber world.
That's true. And they taste great. And that's why anything that tastes great has carbs.
Tomorrow, David Ewing will join us. Paul, you're going to be pumped because we're beginning our chat on the history of Hatch Show Print tomorrow. That's tomorrow at 11:15. And then we get into our Nashville sports retrospective. Chad brought this idea a couple of weeks ago. It's been great over the last 2 weeks, where we started with the history of the public-private split for Tennessee high school football. We then last week discussed the backstory with the name Tennessee Titans and how that came about. Tomorrow, we feature Javon Kearse and his rookie season of just a phenomenal play, 14 and a half sacks. He had 10 forced fumbles and much more. I mean, tons of stories behind every game. Jim Washburn will join us and the freak Javon Kearse on the show tomorrow during the noon hour. And then John McClain at 1 o'clock. You will get your football fix for sure.
It'll be really good. We're looking forward to talking to the freak, talking to Wash, and recounting some of those things. I was firsthand there at Javon Kearse, and it was one of the times I hit the Titans draft pick in what I wrote on draft day, kind of accidentally, because if I recall, my lead was, there's one guy in this draft who could give the Titans what they need. It's too bad Javon Kearse isn't going to be on the board at number 16 when they come on the clock.
And lo and behold, there he was. The stories with him will be great behind the scenes of game by game interaction. And his detail on his stat line for the Music City Miracle game is awesome. I'll set the ball on the tee for him with this. The way he describes that game for him is hilarious and like awesome. So that's coming up tomorrow. That'll be in the noon hour. A lot of great discussion there. Chad Withrow on his furlough this week. But I noticed at his website, tnhighschoolfootball.com, Mount Juliet has been given 2 years probation for their program. I wonder if there's a coincidence, Chad, going on furlough and Mount Juliet probation news happening.
All those proud alumni out there seeing their program, going the extra mile, doing what it takes. Shame.
They've been found of illegally recruiting some player from Wilson Central. There you go.
Is it worth it? Is it worth it?
Cheat, 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 cheat.
Is it worth it? Is it worth it? Such shame brought upon the campus.
It was a fast-paced show today. A lot of fun. Thanks for joining us throughout. Hit the podcasts. Midday180.com, 1045thezone.com is where you can find them. 3HL's coming up, but first a word from Paul Kuharski.
Don't block the box. Dude. Lock the lock.